Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
Morena, Jennifer Curtin, how are you?
Good, thank you, Morena. And how are you?
I'm good. Had a few days watching terrible Netflix shows in bed, and now I'm feeling right as rain and back at it. So it's good to be back. And we've got some big topics to talk about this morning. Super Tuesday, some of the economic implications of coronavirus, and a bit about what's going on with the KiwiSaver default funds. Let's start with Super Tuesday, because this is happening over in America. What is Super Tuesday? What does it mean? What's it looking like? What's going on? Jennifer, help us out.
so how the nominations for presidential candidates in both parties, it works on the system where there are delegates and they're pledged delegates, so kind of like party members, I suppose, in all the different states across America. And so we've seen four or five states already, like the Iowa and New Hampshire, the early ones go. But what happens on Super Tuesday is that 14 states, their delegates turn out and vote for their preferred candidate. And even though we've still not, so there's 3,900 and something delegates, so we saw quite a few, you know, like 14 states with California and Texas having 700 delegates, say. It's like the most intense moment in this campaign through to July. So the result was, I think, for some people quite a surprise, because Bernie Sanders was, you know, considered the front runner because he'd done really well in these early four states. And then Joe Biden seems to have just, you know, come through the middle. And Elizabeth Warren looks like she's going to be out. Bloomberg has left the race. Gabbard only got one delegate from American Samoa. So it's now looking like this really close two-horse race, if we're going to use that kind of metaphor. So Biden has 513 delegates, and Bernie Sanders has 461 delegates. And the target they have to reach before the July convention, where it's all finalised, is 1,991.
Okay. What does that mean in terms of how it works from here?
Yeah, so we've still got quite a few states still to go, but none of them are going to be as big as Texas and California in terms of delegates, probably. You know, those are the big ones. I think what's really interesting now is going forward is just there'll be a lot more forensic analysis of how the sort of the demographics of these delegates. So what we really... analysis shows is that Biden did very well in the southern states, and this is probably quite important if a Democratic nominee is going to beat Trump, because that's where he tends to do well. We know that black voters are really much more likely in those states to go with Biden, so he's popular amongst African Americans and Hispanic delegates, so the minorities in that sense are more pro-Biden, who positions himself as moderate, whereas young voters and those aged between 30 and 44, particularly in California, are very pro-Sanders. So the next step, really, what they're saying is going to have to happen to kind of consolidate their base and win new delegates in the other states is choosing their running mate, so who might be VP. And this is where... given Elizabeth Warren's probably likely to drop out, this is their opportunity to select a younger, potentially progressive woman candidate. So there's a couple of names on the horizon for Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders. So that will make the race interesting for those of us outside America who want to see how the remaining state delegates decide to vote.
Certainly. It's such a very different system to what we have here in New Zealand. It's so hard to wrap
totally
your head around.
Complex.
I can't think of a more American way of naming it as well than Super Tuesday.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's an interesting time for, you know, like if you'd been in front of the telly yesterday afternoon, you could have spent time off Netflix and watching all of this come through for like 6 hours. But I do think, like, once we get to July 17, then we're going to know, you know, who the candidate is, who the running mate is, and it'll all become about Trump and the candidate from the Democrat side.
So this is all within the Democrats at the moment, and then later down the track we start to see the, I guess, the ultimate race or the ultimate sort of thing going on.
And then of course we get to the Electoral College, which again is a very complicated way of, you know, you can win the popular vote and not win the Electoral College vote and still not become the president.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't get any easier, let's say, in terms of following what needs to happen to see Trump or their opposition win.
It's certainly going to be something we'll definitely touch back on again, I'm sure, in the next couple of weeks, as is the next topic that we've got. Obviously, coronavirus is an ongoing situation and we're starting to see it in New Zealand as well. But I'm quite interested to talk a little bit about some of the economic implications of coronavirus for us as a country, but also more broadly too, because it is having big waves around the world. Jacinda Ardern has said it's too early to tell the wider impacts on the economy, but do you have any thoughts about what we're going to be seeing from coronavirus in terms of our economy?
So I understand that the government is trying trying to suppress panic around us, but when we look at the world economy and what the OECD and other international organisations are saying, is because China is such a major player in the global economy and their range of sectors have already been hit as they've had to sort of shut down their country, if you like, to contain it, the OECD is saying that that the world economy is now in its most precarious position since the global financial crisis. And so New Zealand was in quite a solid position to be able to deflect a lot of the GFC's broader implications, and our economy was able to sort of stay pretty secure. This is a really different kind of situation, I think. So the OECD is predicting a decline in global growth over the next 12 months, so they already had a low base of 3%. They're dropping that down to 2.5%, and it might go as low as 1.5%. And if it does that, then that is going to have an impact on the New Zealand economy. So the government has set up this cabinet committee to look into it. The OECD is recommending that any spending go first to health sectors to make sure that, you know, emergency departments and intensive care units and other kinds of health providers have the necessary resource, but that they also have to think about vulnerable households whose you know, workers might lose jobs, be stood down, might not have ready income, and businesses, you know, like tourism and manufacturing and so on out of China, but globally. So those providers will need some buffering. So there's going to have to be a very careful, measured, but activist state approach, I think, in terms of spending and being prepared to do that over the coming 12 months.
I think that this is going to be quite a massive topic, so maybe we will park it there and talk about our last question before we run out of time, because
I'm sure
we'll be coming back to talk about this one again in the future. But let's talk a wee bit about KiwiSaver, staying on the economic thread here, and some of the changes that have just gone through. So there's been a fossil fuels ban, and what's this going to mean for people's KiwiSavers and their default funds, Jennifer?
Yeah, so what we know is the Commission for Financial Capability actually does a review of retirement income policy every 3 years, and they launched their, you know, really interesting and, you know, if you're up for a good read of what retirement policy looks like intergenerationally as well as currently, a lot of the recommendations in there speak to some of these issues around default funds and fossil fuels. So we know that consumers or investors are increasingly likely to want ethical investment for their savings.
Mm-hmm.
So this decision to reduce or to ban, you know, the possibility of investing in fossil fuel companies for retirement savings is likely to be an acceptable one, because ethical consumerism and ethical investment is a growing thing.
Mm.
I think that default going for a balance. So the idea is, at the moment, if you don't opt for a fund or a strategy, an investment strategy in KiwiSaver, then you automatically go to a conservative, which is cash, and we know that there's very little interest that comes, you know, growth that comes from it. And so for young people and, you know, people in their 30s and 40s investing in KiwiSaver, if they're not made the decision themselves, it's going to go to a more balanced fund, which means that it's a portfolio investment that goes across a wide range of options, and it gives a better return on your money. I think this is a good thing. If someone who's, you know, been in a super scheme through the university for a while, it kind of encourages you to think about what your savings are doing, and the CFFC has a really good, you know, educational side to it called Sorted. And if people want to know more about what this all means, they can go to that website and have a look and understand what their investments, you know, what investment package is best for them.
Well, it is quite an interesting one, another sort of topic that I think we'll probably end up coming back to in the near future as well. These are all big ongoing conversations that we're talking about this morning, and I'm sure we'll have them again with you very soon, Jennifer. It's been a pleasure to chat to you today. Thank you for coming on the show.
No worries. Have a good day.
Talk to you in a couple of weeks. Bye.
Bye.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.